This is a production of Cornell University.
UA meeting, September 30th, 2009.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome, new SA members. And is there any items that we may want, if we have time, to talk about at the end? I know there was one.
I drafted a resolution. I'd just like if we had some discussion about it.
You need to state your name.
Andrew Brockman. It's a university assembly member's voting rights clause, and pretty much the purpose of it would be to, as a good first step, to get UA members having votes and serving leadership positions on committees. If we deleted part of that exclusion clause of our charter, that's what the resolution is about.
Great.
Okay. And then moving on, can we move the approval of the minutes to the end of our meeting? Anybody object?
Well, is there anybody who has additions or to the minutes for the two that were sent around May 6th, September 2nd? And I move that we approve both minutes, May 6th, September 2nd.
Okay, Marty second. Moves. Charlie seconds. All in favor? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I have 8 yes.
Wait, there should be 10 people here who are members. 1, 2.
Maybe some are voting against it.
6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Yes. Did you vote?
Yeah.
I answered, yeah.
Did you vote?
Okay, so there's 9.
Yeah.
And I can't vote unless there's a tie.
Oh, I see.
No.
Okay.
So was that okay?
Let's see. Let's wait till the end then.
Okay.
We don't have a quorum to matter.
All right. And let us then move into the Cornell Climate Action Plan resolution.
And Sustainability Committee met, Chair, I yield the floor to Climate Action Plan presenters, wherever they may be.
Yes.
That's it. Tim
Fay, Director of Natural Resources.
So, I know in any audience of this size it's going to be a skeptic. I've learned, I'm a skeptic, I've learned that it's a waste of time to try to convince anybody about their views on climate change. It seems that the world has a majority agreement that climate change is a problem that humans have caused, and Cornell has a plan solve the whole problem. So we're here to, Dan Roth and I are going to describe a little bit about the climate action plan that the President asked us to develop and ask for approval of a resolution regarding.
I can push the button because okay. I've got to tell me when.
Yeah, now. So we're asking the University Assemblies to endorse this plan. It's been endorsed by the Buildings and Properties Committee of the Trustees and by student. GPSA, the Student Association, and it's going to go to a couple of other groups for endorsement. We thought it would be useful to have a discussion and description of what the plan involves because it has some implications probably for students, faculty, staff. So I'll just give you a brief overview of the principles behind this plan. If you could go to the next one. Right. So a couple years ago, Cornell was approached by an independent group to join a coalition called President's Climate Commitment and commit to reducing our carbon footprint. And the language in the this climate commitment is pretty stated pretty positively. The bottom line is to develop and implement a plan with specific targets and timelines for key climate neutrality and pacing in a manner that maximizes opportunities for the university. So we'll try to make a case for the argument to claim that this would maximize opportunities for the university, and we'll tell you a little bit about the nature of the plan. Cornell has really jumped in with both feet on this process, and I think it's safe to say that Cornell is one of the national leaders. I think that's on the next slide. In climate action planning, and Dan, in a few minutes, will give you a little bit more detail about what's in our plan. We spent a lot of money and had a lot of man hours put into developing a plan for neutrality that proposes actions that have these, that provide these opportunities. Now, those are the four opportunities that I'll briefly describe. You might wonder, how can you become carbon neutral and improve your finances? Isn't this anathema? So, briefly, if you could go to the next one. Sure. The argument would be, you can't really, on the face of it, save a lot of money by going carbon neutral in the short run. But if you take into account a time frame that's a little bit longer, and you take into account some assumptions about the future of the value of carbon and the value of energy resources, then you actually can save money. So the assumptions would be that energy costs are going to rise. I think that's a pretty safe assumption. And that the world is going to enact, the country and the world are going to enact regulations that result in a price on carbon, which we don't have now. Pretty good chance that the current federal legislation will make it, we'll see. The fact that it's even going forward in the current financial climate is suggested that it's not going to be long until we come up with climate legislation that puts a price on carbon. So if there's a price on carbon and energy costs rise, then being prepared for that becomes a savings in money. For example, the portfolio that we put forward in the Climate Action Plan includes facilities projects that have a positive net present value, and I'm not an economist, but if somebody wants to explain net present value, all I know about net present value is that if you're going to take your cash and invest it in risk in opportunities with a particular level of risk, that these would say these actions as alternative investments would be on the same par, be on the par with those. For example, if we we invested a lot of money in a combined heat and power plant operation that's going online in a few weeks, on the assumption that natural gas prices are going to rise or coal prices are going to rise, and that there's going to be a price of carbon, we're going to be saving a lot of money in the long run on this, even though the capital cost on it was $80 million. The calculation on a mid-range estimate of future energy costs and carbon compliance costs calculates an internal rate of return of about 15%, and Randy can tell you what that means, but generally it means that you're doing pretty well on your investment if you have a 15% internal rate of return. Is that right? So fiscally, if we make some rather mid-range assumptions about the future of carbon and energy, then we're going to be doing well with this portfolio. The other principles behind the plan involve research, education, and outreach, and the argument is that we would also be enhancing those activities. Go to the next one. For example, there's a variety of research activities that are at the current cutting edge for future technologies that Cornell can be competitive with for, and that the Climate Action Plan can promote. An example is enhanced geothermal energy, which Jeff Tester, who's a faculty member in engineering, is an expert on. He's much more competitive for a grant on enhanced geothermal because we do it as a demonstration of this the potential for this technology on Cornell's campus. And so he has a multi-million dollar proposal into the Department of Energy, which has a much greater chance of getting funded because of the Climate Action Plan than it would if it went in sort of de novo or by upon its own. So that's just an example of research. You can make the same kind of arguments on smart grid technology, on Kirby, which is a biomass biofuel type of an operation. The next one, broaden education.
All right.
The opportunities here result from the fact, some of them result from the fact that there's just a burgeoning of interest from the grassroots up, especially among students, but also among faculty, in getting involved in climate change, because it's this problem that is looming out there, and everybody knows that it's, or most everybody agrees that it's something that we're going to have to deal with. And so if we're well structured to meet those demands or enhance those interests, then we'll be in much better shape. One of the cases we make in the plan is that the campus, because we'd be doing all this advanced research and improving the performance of buildings and energy systems on campus, that this would be an opportunity for learning. And so some courses are already using the campus as a laboratory. Campus is a perfect place. Students who get involved hands-on in activities that are going on that they can see have an immediate return, learn much better than when you think about these things in sort of theoretical and vague ways. And so promoting the campus as a living laboratory is a major part of this whole program. And then finally, in the area of outreach, there's a lot of community outreach that's going on. The community has mixed feelings about Cornell, as we all know. If we can enhance our sort of public relations through the Climate Action Plan, we would like to be able to do that develop, promote economic development in the community and those sorts of things. Carbon offsets are things you pay somebody to reduce their own carbon footprint. Cornell might invest in some of those in the local community, probably not in the general carbon offset market, but in targeted activities that would benefit the local community, like insulating, low-hanging fruit, insulating low-cost, low-efficiency housing, that kind of thing. Okay, I think that might be my last. Okay, yeah. A final thing about the plan is that we created the plan in order for it to be able to be not a piece of paper lying on somebody's desk or in somebody's library, but to be something that's going to be continuously updated and inform policy. And so it's a website, and you can all go see the website if you're interested. I think it was on in the Cornell Chronicle webpage, open page a few days back. And so we'll try to keep this thing living and changing as, for example, the assumptions we made change through time. You might ask the question, is it going to make a difference to decisions that are made at the trustees level or at the college level about particular investments, particular green technologies? And all we can say at this point is we sure hope so. It's not a capital plan, though. It doesn't say we're going to spend $50 million on this. Capital plans will have to be approved separately from this plan. So in general, what the trustees have done, or what the Buildings and Properties Committee has done in signing on to it, is agreeing in principle that this is the way forward on this problem. And the fact that they were willing to do that, I think, is a pretty good testament to their positive thinking on doing this kind of thing. So I'd like to turn it over to Dan for a couple comments about the actual plan. Do you have enough?
Yeah,
sure.
Right, the next slide. So I think Tim's kind of given us a pretty good overview. I'm going to get a little bit more into the detail, backing up a little bit, just so people understand. Our baseline emission inventory is about 319,000 metric tons that we emit through the energy we make on campus or we buy. This is our portfolio between commuting, on-site combustion, purchased electricity, air travel from business. And as you can see, a lot of this, over 56%, is on-site combustion. So that's kind of where we're at today. Next slide.
Where's the total?
So the total isn't actually on this. On this next slide shows a graph over time. So this is actually showing total carbon emissions on the left over time. So we're currently right here at 319,000 a year. When combined heat power comes on this fall, we drop down 20%. to this level, and then this red line is basically the current path that we would project without the climate action plan. If we hadn't been doing all the good things over the last 10, 15 years, we'd really be up here. So this is, you know, from current initiatives already happening. And then everything else to get down to zero by 2050 is everything that's included in the climate action plan. Green development, energy conservation, alternative transportation, fuel mix renewables, and carbon offsetting and offsetting actions. Just a point of reference, some people have asked, you know, why 2050, why is this, you know, why be this aggressive? The Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the Nobel Prize winning group, they did a lot of science behind this and set a major international goal at 80% by 2050. So that from today to 2050 would be this white line here. As you can see, we stayed below that throughout our projections of how aggressive to be about this. Obviously, this is an idealized kind of picture of the future, but it's generally what we predict and modeled based on the actions that we include in place. So I'm gonna buzz through these pretty quick, and really the website is the best place to get more in depth about all of these. So in green development, building energy standards, basically reducing the amount of energy per square foot, and that means different things in labs and offices. Being more effective at space planning and management, supporting Marilyn Cummings in her position as doing space planning and supporting the campus master plan in helping densify campus, decrease sprawl, and use the campus grounds more efficiently over time. Next slide. So this is just one of the kinds of graphics you'll find on the website in our attempt to communicate some pretty complex facilities initiatives to the lay person about, you know, what would, you know, going from baseline usage of energy per square foot to a future, you know, of 170K versus 277 kilowatts. So you'll see these kinds of infographics on the website. Next slide. And as Tim mentioned, you know, faculty and research are going to be a key part of this throughout. Yinghua in human ecology has been one of the active faculty involved in the Climate Action Plan. And through her courses and her research, she's going to be an ongoing player in all of this. And there's other faculty that aren't in this PowerPoint, but I thought we'd sprinkle in a few. Next slide. So in energy conservation, we're really seeing continued efforts in the areas we've already been doing, lighting retrofits, HVAC, heating, cooling systems, conservation, weatherization, ventilation. We've been doing millions of dollars of work over the last 10 years, and we're going to continue to do that. And obviously, you see return on those kinds of investments from conservation. But beginning to do even more energy conservation outreach, that's going to involve students, grad students, undergrads, faculty, staff, and doing some upgrades, like a steam line upgrade, making the pipes more efficient, and working with faculty who are interested in smart grid technology to see how we can demonstrate those kinds of things on campus. Next slide. Again, here's a slide, an infographic, kind of communicating the kind of current Cornellian. Here, this is their portfolio of laptop on while idle, plastic grocery bags, incandescent light bulbs, and trying to move toward a more carbon neutral Cornellian where they're using things like compact fluorescence, low flow shower heads, and they've got a more efficient car. So this is just to communicate again kind of our goals and our direction here. So in transportation, we're talking about providing more travel options for business travel, lower carbon travel options, helping people make decisions about the carbon impact of their travel. Continuing in the direction that transportation is going in for a long time, about reducing single occupancy vehicles. Obviously, there's still single occupancy vehicles on campus, and we can continue to move in that direction through van pool, car share, working with TCAT and increasing those kinds of things. And the campus fleet, obviously, is pretty gasoline-centered. We've done little initiatives here and there in terms of natural gas-powered vehicles at different points, compressed natural gas. You see some electric vehicles on campus. We want to continue in that direction and enhance our fuel efficiency of our fleets. And this is just another one of our infographics. Next slide. So this, if you remember from the wedge chart, we call that the chart of emissions over time. Fuel mix and renewables is one of the biggest chunks of where we're going to see the biggest reductions. As I think everyone knows we burn coal now. We're moving to natural gas. We buy electricity from the state grid. So there's a lot of where our carbon portfolio comes from. So if we can, so what we have in the plan is that Tim mentioned, developing with Jeff Tester and other faculty some demonstration of enhanced geothermal systems, eventually moving towards wind power. Kirby, which would be looking at biomass from farms, our own agricultural areas that we can have. We can turn those waste products into energy, increasing the capacity of our hydro plant, and co-firing wood in the current boilers that we have, the current coal boilers, and replacing, again, doing some kind of systems upgrades and replacing turbines. Next slide. And this is one of the infographics on enhanced geothermal. As you can see, the concept is basically that the Earth can heat 2 to 4 miles underground. It's a steam, a water and a steam-based system. And the DOE, this would be the kind of thing that would be very dependent on federal funding through the Department of Energy. We'd definitely be one of the few and first in the Northeast. This is something that's been popping up in the West, where these kinds of resources are also very prevalent. And this is Jeff Tester. Just if you meet him around campus, you can let him know how you might be able to help him. He's going to need a lot of help. This is a really big project that he's involved in. So next slide. Offsetting actions. There's a lot of different ways we could go about this. Some of it might be involved with faculty research on forest sequestration through Cornell's forests. Some of it might be involved with biochar, which is a technology Cornell researchers are involved with, that is actually, you know, producing energy, and then the final product is also a soil amendment. So there's some interesting ways in which that sequesters carbon at multiple levels. And then working with the community, as Tim mentioned, investing and supporting and helping develop community-based offset programs that could help people in their homes across the county. And obviously, over time, there'll be other options that will help us offset off campus. Next slide. This is just another infographic on the web. So that's a quick overview. We have some brochures over there. If you want to take, they look like bookmarks. To get involved in the climate action plan, there's lots of different nice designs. There's some over there. Take them to your colleagues and friends. They basically just direct people to the website, because we've designed this to be an evolving plan. And the website is going to be is where the comprehensive plan is. So that's the end of the presentations. I guess I'm seeing hands already. How are we doing on time? And
I think the best thing would be for us to move the resolution, and then have the questions come in response to the resolution. If that's acceptable to you, that's I think the most efficient way of keeping in the time frame and at the same time getting the point. Because there are lots of questions that can be answered by the website, and rather than have this be an information session, we want it to be a legislating session as well. So, I mean, as the chair of the Sustainability Committee, I want to say that we have we've considered this resolution, and well, you'll learn more about that committee. It's listed on one of the membership is listed. It's your committee. We endorse the resolution and send it to you with our endorsement. And so I move this resolution, concurrent assembly's resolution expressing support for the Cornell University Climate Action Plan, which has been drafted by the Climate Action Plan Committee, and which has been endorsed by the Employee Assembly and the Graduate Professional Students Association Assembly. Is there a second?
Second. Second by Leon.
Okay, so discussion, and discussion could be directed.
I was wondering if we could just add a word to this. On the second whereas, it says the University Assembly recognizes that Cornell University is uniquely positioned to demonstrate leadership in addressing global climate change by combining academic research. I was wondering if we can add an extension in operational efforts.
I propose the resolution. I'd accept it as a friendly amendment. Would you feel, how do you feel about that?
I guess we already had two assemblies already passed that, and I was hoping that we could all agree on the wording before going into, but if it's something you deem important that you want to add in there, I'm sure.
I'm not an extension, but I think often the extension people are left out in certain things.
Well, I think that part of Dan's presentation talked about, and Tim's talked about the value of extension in promoting this. So
I'm sure in there we say outreach once or twice.
Outreach. Well, extension is extension right up to the front, combining academic research and operational efforts. Extension and operational efforts. By the way, this is the version we weren't able to send around, the one with the one or two word changes that you had. What were they?
It was just a spelling mistake.
Oh.
On the word pledge.
I'm sorry. P-L-E-D-G.
It's the last word I thought. Last word.
Right. So maybe this. How do you spell pledge? P-L-E-D-G-E.
L in there, yeah.
Huh?
There's supposed to be an L in there.
Oh, yeah, the E. Yeah, right. Okay, so. We'll put an L in, folks. All right. What about that word? Is there enough interest and support in putting an extension into the top academic research and extension and operational efforts, or is it a problem of coordinating that you want to be concerned about?
Just because a lot of faculty have appointments that are extension research, or teaching extension. And, of course, it then emphasizes the relationship between Cornell and the community.
But outreach is already mentioned a couple of times, right? It's being mentioned right in that clause.
I mean, it's the same difference as...
I don't think it's in that clause. Where is it?
Research.
Campus community members.
Yeah, I didn't print one because those didn't do it.
It's not a huge issue.
Not a big issue?
No.
To add
either way.
You can still say it has by
everybody. Yeah.
All right. So, is everybody on board with accepting that? I accept it as a friendly one. You guys do? Okay. Extension and outreach. All right. So, the. Any other discussion? Yeah, Elizabeth.
The plan seems very technology oriented, and I was surprised by the thinness of the line on transportation alternatives. Usually, on the national level, if you're looking at greenhouse gas emissions, transportation looms very large. There doesn't seem to be much of a plan to do much about transportation beyond what we're doing now. Yeah, I'm always concerned that we're still building new parking lots, which is going to increase driving. It always does. This law of building parking lots. If you have parking lots, people will drive. And I don't see us doing much about that. Also, as far as trees, we're still cutting down trees. We're still building parking lots. We're still cutting down trees. Most of the savings anticipated here are from, you know, changing fuel mix and using geothermal, but there's no idea of cutting down energy consumption, just of making energy in different ways. And as far as trees, I didn't see anything on there about trying to save trees. We have a kind of ironclad rule on this campus that if any parking space disappears, a new parking lot has to be built. But we don't have a rule like that for trees, and we cut down new trees every semester. We cut down new, big, old trees. Why is that not a part? Why is real alternatives, like, you know, I just saw a documentary the other day on PBS about parrots putting everybody on bicycles with all these little rental bicycles. We don't build any bike paths or bike lanes. As soon as that new parking lot goes, is fully operational for Forest Home Drive, it's going to make biking much more dangerous along Forest Home Drive where there are no bike paths at all. And I just wonder why that, all those kinds of ways of limiting fossil fuel emission are not really much a part of the plan. Is that because they're not sexy and technological, or what?
Can you actually go back to
Okay, we're off the screen. I guess it doesn't matter. We can't read that.
Yeah. Can you just hit the blue button in the middle? What I was simply going to show was the carbon reduction, or the... This is getting complicated.
Okay, how far back do you want me to go?
Far back. I was just going to go back to that wedge chart, all the diff over time.
Yeah,
there you go. So, this was how much we were kind of aiming to reduce in travel. And this
but
is
it's
how much
still going up.
It's still going up. Yeah, you can say.
And it's very, very slim. And just nationally, that's a major contributor to greenhouse gases, and yet it seems a very minor thing here.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it definitely could be more. There's, in the transportation impact mitigation study and the strategies that came out of that plan, there was a lot of things that they want to do over time that we felt like basically supporting that initiative. And that included things, more alternatives to the alternatives to single occupancy vehicles over time and more fuel efficient fleet. So we basically, the Climate Action Plan just supported the general strategies of the TIMS and the TGEIS process, mm-hmm. similar to the way that it's supporting the Campus Master Plan and its goals of density.
It kind of locks us into the thinking of about 5 years ago. And there are ways of connecting this in interesting ways, like with national and international obesity epidemic. If more people were biking and walking and not driving, then regardless of the kind of fuel they're using in their cars, it would be a good thing. And they could save more trees, and things would look better, and it wouldn't be all concreted over. And
I think at this point we have to move forward with another plan. But I think that's been registered.
Well, I can respond with some more data if you'd like it with me.
Or data on this particular issue?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, yeah, fine.
Well, go back to the pie chart.
How is it back or forward?
Yeah, one's back. Yeah. One. Yeah. So you're exactly right. On a national basis, transportation is a much larger wedge than it is here at our campus microcosm. So when we look at our commuting, which I think is what you're addressing, it's like 9% of our footprint to a commuting. And in nationwide, it's like I think over almost 30%. But that's because just the nature of how, you know, where we drew the circle and how we inventoried our campus. And we did actually go, there's a lot of effort by the transportation wedge looking at going beyond where we are now. And so today we're at like 56% of our employees commute with single occupied vehicles. And the idea is the pre-existing mitigation strategy was, as we grow, keep that constant. Whereas our plan, we wanted to cut that number in half. And so they've been exploring a lot of the ideas you've mentioned, and we'll continue to explore them. But you know, I think they're all good ideas, and they're not easy to make happen.
But they're not so hard either. I mean, building bike paths so that you can safely commute by bicycle. We have bike accidents here. I wish somebody kept up with them, because I've witnessed a couple myself in a fairly short period of time. And just all kinds of reasons to make walking and biking safer and take advantage of the beautiful natural environment, get people outside. I'm really always astounded at what a minor part that plays in our climate thinking.
Well, any other questions or thoughts about the resolution?
I have a question. Was striving for the LEED higher classifications as part of that involved in the paragraph?
Yeah. Well, since the board had already passed the policy on LEED Silver and 30% more energy efficient buildings, that was kind of considered as our baseline. So that was before the Climate Action Plan. So I don't think there was any. I mean, there's the assumption that we're going to implement that policy as much as possible. I don't think there's. There was that section on increasing the energy intensity of buildings and doing energy modeling of the buildings we're building. So that goes beyond what's in the original policy that the board passed. But that's not necessarily restricted to LEED. LEED actually doesn't require that aggressive energy approach to energy reduction. So our policy is already 30% beyond national energy code standards. And then this climate action plan goes beyond that by saying we're going to develop energy modeling standards so that we can go, as we were showing in that one graphic, from 277 kilowatts per square foot to 177 within lab buildings. So that's going even beyond the current E30 policy.
I'd call the resolution question.
Well, so we don't have to vote for that question. Maybe we could ask if there are any further comments. Do you want to leave the voting?
Go ahead. Yep.
Seeing none.
Everyone ready to vote? All in favor? 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 10, yes. Opposed? Abstentions? 1 abstention. 0 opposed. And that passes.
Right. Well, thank you very much. The next resolution comes out of, in a sense, or at least relates fairly closely to, and I'm once again taking the 4 because it's a sustainability committee resolution. But I think there's some folks who are on the CAP committee who have an interest in speaking about this resolution. It's the one having to do with a revolving loan fund and small projects loan fund. Dan, you're sticking around. What we there's been a letter, the Sustainability Committee drafted a letter which explains most of the materials having to do with the or most of the rationale for having this resolution, and one could look at it as a kind of implementation, you could say, or a practical dimension, though it's not practical in the climate action plan. It's a way of getting local constituencies involved in implementing it in very real, concrete ways. For example, I mean, if there was a way of talking about having a revolving loan fund for creation of bike paths, we could get people small amounts of money, small amounts of capital, relative to these amounts that the CAP folks are talking about. They're talking about very large amounts. But we could get small amounts contributed to create those paths on campus. If it was a matter of replacing light fixtures, switches with motion activated switches so that they go off in most of the classrooms or classrooms or other facilities. That's a small CAP project for not for the whole campus but for one division of the campus. And this revolving loan fund is a way of getting capital to make those projects possible. So what the Sustainability Committee proposed is, and debated and discussed over a period of several months, is this resolution to create such a fund. It's actually two different funds, a small energy project fund and a revolving loan fund for energy efficiency. And I could read the resolution to you. In fact, I'd like to present the resolution and then have a discussion about it. And debate about it. So it's whereas President Davis Gordon has commended the University Assembly for taking a leading role in advocacy for sustainable practices, that's a quote, and has encouraged the UA to, quote, present, quote, fresh perspectives on how those practices can be put in place at Cornell, whereas the UA has charged its University Sustainability Committee with making recommendations to the UA concerning the, quote, development and implementation of community sustainability issues, policies, and programs, unquote. And whereas the university faces an increasingly tight budget, and whereas traditional investments no longer have the certainty they once did, and whereas energy efficiency projects have a certain, near certain and often significant return, And whereas President Davis Gorton has signed the American College and University President's Climate Commitment, hereby pledging to make Cornell University's campus carbon neutral. And whereas there are many cost-effective ways to increase energy efficiency on campus, and these improvements would save both money and energy. And whereas the University Sustainability Committee has informed the University Assembly that these cost-effective improvements face obstacles in funding and implementation. And whereas the University Sustainable Committee has made the UA aware of solutions that other universities have found to overcome these obstacles, be it therefore resolved that the university should establish a revolving loan fund for energy efficiency, which will present the following opportunities for establishing sustainable practices in the university. This fund will be a specific pool of money available in the form of loans to the utilities department to invest in energy efficiency projects. The projects will reduce the operating costs of the central utilities, allowing them to pay back the loan through their energy savings over an established time period. This fund is to be funded in whatever manner the university sees fit. The fund will be managed in a way consistent with the source of revenue, be that in the budget office or by a separate committee or staff person designated by the university. Be it therefore resolved that the university should establish a small energy fund project fund, which will present the following opportunities for establishing sustainable practices in the university. The fund will be a pool of money available in the form of loans to any department wishing to invest in energy efficiency projects. These projects will reduce the operating costs associated with the patron department, allowing the budget office to pay back the loan based on estimated energy savings over an established time period. The fund is to be funded in whatever manner the university sees fit. Other universities have designated part of the endowment. Students have proposed using a green activities fee of $10 per student per year. The fund will be managed in a way consistent with a source of revenue, be that in the investment office or by a separate committee or staff person designated by the university. Students, faculty, and staff should be included in the management process, both to include voices from across the university community and to serve as a learning process. So that's the resolution.
Is there a second?
I'm happy to second it.
So is there discussion? And for discussion, I'd really be pleased to have another member of the Sustainability Committee, Dan Roth, respond. And Fred Cowett, who is here as the Graduate Student Assembly Representative on the Sustainability Committee as well. Yes.
To what extent would there be problems in investing this kind of money in state-owned buildings? State is very picky about what you do in their buildings. They have their own budget lines for their buildings. Is there be a, I mean, maybe it's a financial question, it has nothing to do with this resolution. It's just saying, you know, let's make it happen. But I'm just curious how free one is to take, you know, university money and invest it in, you know, Boyce Thompson. You know, we don't own that building.
Right.
Their building. And
right.
We've got Old Soil and Nutrition Lab. Would right. they be eligible to ask for a loan out of this kind of thing?
I don't know the nature of the state budget and how it's allocated, but doesn't Cornell pay some of the expense of state buildings?
In a way, it's very complicated. I just don't think we ought to worry about it. I think we ought to stand on the general principle and let the bureaucrats worry about the bureaucracy.
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of what I thought. I'm just curious as to whether in your ruminations over this, or that kind of...
Well, we
I don't know how it works.
We were meeting in a state building, Rice Hall. I presume that's a state building. And we've talked about renovations to Rice Hall and to make it more energy efficient. And in the process, the people who work in Rice Hall, Frank DeSalva, have said, money is spent in Rice Hall that is not state money. So I would expect that it could be spent that way. Of course, the process is that the money goes to a division, a hall or a program, and that program then gets credited for its savings and pays back in that sense the money by having done.
Well, for instance, the steam is generated by the steam plant over there and goes to every building on campus. They get charged from the state. Pays part of that charge, probably not enough, I would imagine, but anyway, they pay part of it for the heat in Rice Hall, And so if the steam, by the use of these loan funds, is less expensive, it's going to benefit everybody.
So that might have actually gone a little way to answering my question. My question was, say, how does this work? If Central Utilities takes out a loan to improve their facilities, are they themselves, are they an enterprise user?
Yes, they are.
Okay, so then the money that they would save, okay, that would answer my question, how exactly they would save this back.
Right. Should I recognize you, even though you haven't raised your hand? You had some, Mike, you had a reservation about the student loan fund thing.
Oh,
The student $10, student $10 fee.
Well, there are a couple issues there, specifically in regards to the fact that a couple of years ago it was kind of passed by referendum by the undergraduate student body AC, but the student assembly went back there and realized that they could not implement that charge the way that they expected to. At the graduate student level, there was actually not really much of a desire to follow this for a number of reasons. And one of which was we realized early on that it was impractical for implementing. But, it's something that some students have discussed. I don't see too much value in it. And I kind of have a little bit of a reservation in this, in kind of bringing this up again and suggesting it as a method, because we looked at this a couple of years ago and realized we cannot implement it in the way that it was being discussed. And to kind of bring that up again puts an onus on the other assemblies who are to some degree represented here, but kind of puts the pressure by the UA for them to
think about it again
without too much discussion.
Well, I looked this up and I found that there are campuses where that's happened.
Mm-hmm.
There has been a student contribution, which is in the fund. And I'm not saying that it needs to be done exactly in the same way, but our undergraduate student representative appointed by the student assembly was the one who had this clause as a possibility. And you notice it's framed in such a way that it says some students have suggested. It's not really clear in the resolution who has suggested it. Students have proposed. It doesn't mean necessarily Cornell students. I mean, it could be students in other universities. It could be another. No. My point in saying that is the fund is to be funded in whatever manner the university sees fit. Other universities have a designated part of the endowment.
Mm-hmm.
And then in that same clause, it says students have proposed, meaning that it could be another university students have been able to work this out. It's not trying to say, you guys voted it down, that's terrible. It's saying, you may want to look at ways in which students who are interested can contribute to this. In other words, putting their money where their interests are. Well, anyway, I'm just saying that's why it's framed that way. It's not framed, and Cornell students should. It's not saying that.
Just to quickly finish up on that, my central reservation is, taking money that the students' money, and it's their decision to give this money, to donate this money, put their money where their mouth is, and pass it off to some, kind of university committee that's not going to be well attended or well publicized. We can try that. But it's probably going to be a group of people who are quite removed from the political processes. And taking the students' money and putting that there without that much oversight is, I think, very problematic in terms of,
Well, that's a subtle point. It has to be debated, really, in another forum than this, because it's not necessarily, we're not proposing a star chamber committee here that will dispense this money. I mean, it could be that it's a very open process, too.
Does it help to...
Oh, I'm sorry. I think you were...
Yeah, I would like to express some reservation about this clause as well, about how the fund will be funded.
Which one?
The same clause says the fund is to be funded in whatever manner the university sees fit. What this is trying to accomplish, I would like some added transparency and not just some removed committee making these decisions about how are we going to fund it. I would like to see something more explicitly setting up involvement of all the various constituencies. So this affects all members of the Cornell community. I would like to see student involvement, graduate student involvement, employee involvement. I'd like to see everyone involved in this process and not have it be something that can just be passed off to the administration.
The next slide.
I mean, yes, but it leaves it to say it to be funded in whatever manner the university sees fit.
That's where the money comes from. Is the university prints it in the basement or finds the rich alumnus that's how the university sees fit to gather the money. It doesn't say that's how it's spent. I mean, if an alumnus decides that this is something that their $100 million could go towards, I don't think we'd object, would we?
But then we wouldn't need this resolution, probably, right? We wouldn't need to be acting. The alumnus decided they wanted to do that themselves.
Well, no, I think that this resolution is a very important resolution, because what I think it does is frame the issue that this is a way of operating, it's a way of incentivizing the community to think about energy savings in a way that it's going to require an investment, but it's going to produce a return. And it hopes to capture that return to keep this corpus, the body of money, available to fund future activities. And it seems to me very useful for the community to say that they think this is a good idea. Now, granted, to some extent the devil is in the details, but I think the thing that's really important is for this group to say that they think this is a good idea and a good concept.
Yeah. There was two words in the letter that aren't in the resolution, and that's for the green activities fee. In the letter, it says it's an opt-out $5 semester versus fee. So if opt-out is put in there?
We're not actually proposing that. If it makes it any easier, I can imagine I could imagine leaving out that whole clause. The students have proposed using it. It was there as an example But if we just have the fund is to be funded whatever the university sees fit, other universities have designated part of their endowment. I mean, I'd love to have that continue in there. But if you prefer dropping that out as well, I would consider it friendly to drop out the students that propose using a green activities fee. What do you think about that?
I think what you're saying, which is what I understood, we were simply trying to give examples of
that's all we're
what
trying to do.
Universities have done.
Right.
So there's a general sense of, you know, of peer institutions. And I don't think that's a detail that could be explained later.
Or we could put in elsewhere students have proposed using a green activity fee.
Or for example.
For example,
or green activity fees, or bake sales, or
well, I don't want to put bake sales in.
No,
I think we can handle that without bake sales. But let's see. The fund is to be funded in whatever manner the university sees fit. For example, other universities have designated part of the endowment, all right, I'll put for example in before the for example. How's that? Is that? Are you happy with that, or is that what captures the sense of it? Just a second, to handle that, or is this a comment on that?
This is a comment on that.
Okay, yeah.
So, knowing that is a possibility of fund, personally, I mean, I think this is a great idea. I can't vote on this. I can't vote yes for this without talking to the people who you're potentially asking to fund this. You're saying we know that an option on the table would be to go into the students. And yes, I mean, I do represent graduate professional students, but I would like to talk to people on a larger scale and talk to the assembly as a whole. Why is there not a similar option for faculty and staff? And yeah, I just simply think that this
We can put another example in. For example, faculty members can contribute.
To me, that the bigger issue is that this is a great idea, but it's something that needs to be brought back to a larger group to consider. I mean, I would love to vote yes for this, but I can't do that until I talk to more people about whether or not, you know, there's subtleties and this is a good idea.
Okay. Yes.
The only reason I don't think it makes sense to put that clause in there is because student assembly byline funding is a process where you have to go through and get a certain amount of signatures, and then you have to wait. Well, it's going to be 2 years from now until you could get funds for something like this from the student activity fee. And I just think it throws the resolution a little bit off point from the greater goal. I also have a question. Susan Murphy chairs this subcommittee, right? So if we were to enact this loan program, it would actually go into effect if we were to vote on this, right?
No.
No.
What subcommittee are you talking about?
The Sustainability Committee should chair.
No, I chair.
I think what you're referring to is the Sustainable Investment.
Oh, okay.
The Ad Hoc Sustainable Investment Committee with Steve Golding and Susan.
Right, this is
chair it did kind of in their informal set of proposals. This was included, a revolving loan fund was included in there, formally presented proposals.
So is it fair to say that the administration already finds this kind of proposal favorable?
All I can say is that the committee that Steve Golding and Susan Murphy chairs did consider this, and it was kind of that part of what happened is that committee stopped meeting actively, but this was included in their kind of final set of suggestions, and the director of facility services is in support of this proposal as well.
Has the utilities department expressed interest in getting loans so they could reinvest?
The proposal, everything that you're reading, the resolution, the letter, was reviewed and vetted by facility services and the utilities and energy management department. So they're fully aware of it. They've helped us think through the implementation of it and its feasibility, and yes, they're interested.
And the us there is the University Sustainability Committee.
Right. Thank you.
Yeah, that's all my questions for now.
Good.
Yeah. I would like to suggest as a friendly amendment to change the wording in the last sentence of the resolution. I feel like this would would help guarantee more transparency. Where it says now that students, faculties, and staff should be included in the management process, I feel like it would help guarantee more transparency throughout the entirety of the process if it said students, faculty, and staff must be included throughout the process. This way it's not just, okay, we're going to establish this fund, and once we have the money, everyone's going to be involved. This way in getting the money, if there is going to be discussion of any type of student green activities fees and things like that, that throughout the process you'll have all the constituencies involved, not just after the fact once the ball's rolling.
Must be included throughout to be substituted for should be included
in the management process, yeah.
Vote to include voices and growth from cross-promoting community service living process. So you're concerned I was thinking that you were just going to say strike the word should and put will in its place, but you actually want two things to be done. You want to compel the presence of all three communities, and you also want to compel them in the raising of the money as well.
Yes.
Well, since this clause is only to do with management of the fund, I think that we shouldn't have the throughout the process in this clause, because the previous clause is the one that talks about raising the money, and this clause talks about management,
I can imagine putting will in place of should would solve the problem of making sure that they're compelling the participation of students, faculty, and staff in the management process, and then finding some other way of doing that in the funding clause. You follow me?
Okay, would you accept this friendly then if in the clause before it too, when it says this fund is to be funded in whatever manner the university sees fit, with the, and then after that, before the semicolon, to include, and students, faculty, and staff should be will be included in this process?
In which process?
The fund is to be funded in whatever manner the university sees fit, and then insert, comma, students, faculty, and staff will be included.
Well, see, I happen to believe that if you're asking all those constituencies to participate in funding it by saying that you're including them in it, then you're actually putting more pressure upon them to come up with the money. Whereas if you just propose this as a good resolution for, you know, something that after all, students are not going to be the people putting this together. It's going to be the budget office, unless the students want to take over the budget of the university. Students, for example, or faculty and staff, it's the same way. We entrust that to other people. What we're making is a suggestion, those people who have control of the purse, that they do this. So if we leave, I'm perfectly happy to leave out the examples. Other universities that designate part of the endowment, students propose a green activity fund. If that complicates things, just say the funds should be funded whatever manner the university sees fit, and let them go about raising the money. I'm also happy to put will be included in the management process down in the last clause. But to talk about how the students and faculty and staff should be deeply engaged in raising the money, I think is putting too much of a onus on those, it's going further in the direction of talking about a green fee than farther away from it. Elizabeth,
this sounded like it's such a good idea to me originally, because these were small investments that would pay for themselves. So it's just so rational. But the more we explore it, and the more it seems that we're creating a really cumbersome bureaucracy. And are we not trying to create a fund through some kind of tax, maybe, we don't know how it would be funded, that to get the university to do things they ought to be doing anyway? Why not just a resolution that says that any department manager or building manager who can come up with a program to save X amount of money in 5 years should get money for that, because that's so rational, but put the onus on the university to fund it through fundraising, through the endowment. If we leave it to this kind of tax, then one can almost imagine, again, sort of thinking...
Well, wait a minute, tax is different from fundraising. Fundraising is not
exactly
a tax.
Exactly. But I much prefer to leave it to ordinary university fundraising and to make it automatic, that any building manager, any program manager who can come up with an energy-saving mechanism that will pay for itself through normal projections, like the ones we're doing here, in 5 or 10 years, that should just always have a priority for the university.
Dan, I believe there's something like that already existing, isn't there?
Yeah.
Let him answer that because there is a program where if you come up with a way of saving money, you can more easily get money.
So does this add another set of money, or would it? What I'm worried about, just the worst case scenario, is that some building or department or program that was thinking of doing something and being funded in the ordinary way, because this is what the university should be doing, if it's pursuing climate neutrality, that then they'll sort of wait and say, well, we couldn't get the money, so we couldn't get our little grant from this fund, so we'll wait another 5 years. I mean, the university should be doing all this as fast as it can anyway. Are we sure we won't slow down that kind of adaptation by creating this alternative fund with this cumbersome bureaucracy and unknown funding and stuff?
I think it would be, I'll try to respond to
as much as I can. Utilities and energy management has been basically going as fast and furious as they can with energy conservation for the last 10 years. I mean, they've spent $10 million. It's true.
I just wondered why there are no light sensors and so on. I mean, they're buildings blazing all night long.
Because you're not cost effective, believe it or not.
You can save so much more money.
Right. I mean, we had a presentation by utilities folks at the Sustainability Committee. I mean, you could have been there, and you can come here and talk the same way. It's like dollar for dollar. If you put, you know, $1 million into a heat plant or something, I guess more than that, you save quantum amounts more than if you put in light sensors. But you do save something, but if you're going to be a utilities management person, you want to save the big bucks before you start nickel and diming your savings. On the other hand, it's a lot closer to the daily life of you and I, although he did post the daily life in the wintertime, to have automatic sensors and things of that sort. That's what this would cover.
So this is really designed for small scale.
That's why it's called small energy conservation.
Some big project on campus would soak up all the money
that's
called that the university should pay for anyway.
Energy efficiency for small energy projects.
Do you have in mind a cap on the size of the grant?
Well, I mean, you know, we can put lots of figures,
As a way of making sure this is for the small thing that's being left out.
You mean, are we raising money for the big cats? Are we actually paying off? Is this part of their bonuses or something? You know, we're raising money for big projects and surreptitiously or something?
No, are we just assuming, given the way you say they think, that these big things have already been thought of and they're doing them, as you say, as fast as they can? But the little things, the reason we're not seeing any change in lights on all night is because that's too small to matter to them, and so we're going to provide now a small fund for that to make those small things matter. Is that the idea?
Yeah, I mean, that is the idea, that there are two funds in this resolution. Right. One which would continue to support and be a new, hopefully more kind of long-term, more secure source of funding for the large-scale projects, and a more long-term and secure source of funding for small-scale projects. Basically, what has happened at other universities is they've created a revolving loan fund, just basically an endowment of sorts, specifically dedicated for energy conservation. We don't have something like that currently, even though we have been investing in taking debt to invest in energy conservation because we knew there was a payback. But it was not a dedicated pool of funds in the way that Harvard or other schools have created specifically a revolving loan fund. And so the idea here is to create something that's a little bit more secure and permanent and identified specifically as an energy conservation revolving loan fund. They could fund both, and there'd be two then kind of channels out into the community, one to large scale, kind of utility scale projects, and one for small scale, kind of more grassroots initiated projects.
Does this mean we're giving up on the Harvard solution of having a dedicated endowment? That sounds pretty secure to me. A dedicated endowment.
In the conversation we've been having now, it's about this, you know, wording of funding it as the university sees fit. I think there was a hesitation of speaking. I'll speak from my own memory of our committee's conversation. So there's a hesitancy of kind of ordering the university to pay for it a certain way, and that's what we were just been talking about recently in the last few minutes. But instead, to just without having figured out exactly how it would get paid for, but by saying this should happen at this sense of scale with these purposes in a manner that's similar to what other universities have done. I think that's the intent.
And why don't we just press them directly to do the endowment thing that the other universities have done instead of having to come up with a different plan?
Good question.
Yes, Randy.
I like this resolution, and it looks to me actually first and foremost an opportunity for a donor to put up a lot of money and see that maybe there's a lot of internal support with different people and constituencies within the campus for that donor to put up a lot of money. And then I wonder if something like this should have a sunset clause, that in 2050, when the money's no longer needed, it would go into
length.
Hmm. Well, we could certainly have another resolution to add a sunset clause when we get closer to 2050. Maybe another 10 years, if we're really so much farther along.
You'll have to move it.
I'd like to summarize. Yeah.
I just like that one more time. I mean, this resolution is great, and it's going to help me. I've been in a couple of discussions with a number of trustees, a couple of key trustees who are really interested in developing something like this at the university, and you know, in getting it off the ground and getting some solid investments, you know, in energy efficiency in place. I think my concern with it is this resolution just kind of becomes a little bit too cumbersome too quick. There's just a lot of extraneous worry in here, and in my opinion, you know, the trying to say what other schools are doing, and you know, the last two whereas clauses. I think everyone knows that we're all tight for funding right now, and I'm just asking if there's a way we can simplify this up and just get to the meat of the issue and say we need this now to save some money to go after our sustainability goals. And just close it there, open the door for new discussion. Just say that there's a lot of people out there who are interested in this, and then see what happens next.
Interested in the creation of a plan.
Yeah.
That's the alternative. Just you're pushing them anyway. Why not push them to do this?
I'm not certain whether you're speaking to table this and you reform it for us, or whether you're saying that we should proceed with this, but cut certain clauses out.
I think if I were, I don't want to, I'd like to actually get this off the ground rather quick.
Yeah.
For a couple other discussions I've been having.
Right.
If anything, I'd recommend the last two whereas clauses and maybe some of these examples later on in the...
Just some of the examples being the students have proposed to get a green education.
Or part of the endowment. I mean, a lot, everyone who sees this resolution is already going to start thinking that already.
So can we just cut out the core of it?
That's something different than what he's saying, and I'd like to deal with what he's saying first. The core is lots. You're saying leave out the last two whereases. Whereas there are many cost-effective ways to increase energy efficiency on campus, the improvements would save both money and energy. The obstacles in funding, you're saying, why take note of the fact that there are obstacles? Leave that out, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you're saying the USC has made the aware of solutions other universities found. Leave that out too. Are you all right with that?
The whereas clauses?
The two.
Yeah.
All right. Are you all right with that, Fred?
Yes.
I'd accept that. It's friendly for three of us. Why not? Okay. And then the resolving loan fund seems solid. Let's see. The further resolve the university's small energy project fund, present opportunities for establishing sustainable practices, a pool of money available in loans, projects to reduce operating costs for the patron department. The fund will be funded in whatever manner the university sees fit, dropping out the examples. Yes? Is that what you're saying?
Sure.
Good. Is that what you accept that? You accept that?
That's right.
More friends. Yes, that's what friends are for. Okay, and then at the end, we have the fund will be managed in a way I'm not averse to considering it friendly to say, rather than should be included, will be included. I don't know what you feel about that. Pardon? That's what you were speaking of. I think we meant will, and I'm happy to say will. Where is will when we need it? All right. So will be included in the management process. That's once again another friendly, although if we could vote on any of those, what do you feel? Any comments further? We're leaving out the two last whereases. We're leaving out the two examples. And we're substituting will for should.
Are you leaving out the two sentences about the chair by Susan Murphy? Because I think that
there's nothing here.
There's nothing by
Susan Murphy.
That's in the letter.
That's in the letter. If you want, I can read the letter to everybody. I did say that I would mention who was on the university sustainability committee. I think I ought to do that now. Janine Krause is an employee assembly appointee. Fred Cowett, who is here, is the Graduate Professional Students Association employee. Faculty Senate employee is Professor Zelman Waroff, who strongly supports this, but it could not be here today. Dan Roth is the designee of the Office of Environmental Compliance and Sustainability. Student Assembly appointee is Phil Eden. Center for Sustainable Future designee is Professor Frank DeSalvo, who also strongly supports the resolution.
Do we really need the statement of, will this fund will be funded in whatever manner the university sees fit? I mean, kind of obvious?
No, I think it's a useful phrase because it leaves open a variety of possibilities, getting donations, using the endowment, using a variety. I think it gives encouragement for any position, and I think it's useful to say that.
But does anything else in here close the door on those on those ideas of finding a large donor?
But why would you want to delete it?
I mean, it seems totally extraneous. I don't think it's saying anything.
I don't consider that friendly. We can vote on it. Would you like to present that as a motion to delete that?
Sure.
Okay. Is there a second? Elizabeth seconds. All right. Discussion. I'd like to call a question on that. We can vote on the question, or is there a discussion actually?
So I just elaborate. I mean, I don't think it's saying much, and I think that it's telling the university, hey, we're open to whatever idea you want to come to us and ask for money for. Or I just think we should just leave it at the university knows that we want this.
Who is the university?
The administration, who is ultimately going to make these decisions on how to do this. I mean, I'm extremely worried that the university is going to say, hey, we don't have any extra money floating around. You're asking us to find some extra money for a fund. Students are a nice source to us. And like I said earlier, I don't want to vote on something where students might be encouraged as a source of this without actually going and talking to a larger body of students.
So your feeling is that the university would actually tax the students without them agreeing to it?
It's going to be suggested to the university that they should tax students. I mean, let's be honest, there's not extra money sitting around at the university, right? And so we're saying, hey, we want money set aside, and then we're telling the university, oh, find this money however it is you feel fit to find this. We're saying this explicitly to them. It seems like all too obvious to the things that I'm saying, oh, where can we get some money? Well, donors are one thing. Donors are kind of hard to get. Students, okay, we'll go to the assembly now. We'll go get money from students. I think it's...
Well, I mean, does the university administration propose a resolution to the student assembly?
To graduate professional student assembly?
Does it come to you and say, we would like money? Does it do that? I mean, is that the order? No, I'm asking you if that's the process that you're thinking would happen.
I don't know how they would come to us. I mean, we might come for byline funding, might probably know.
I can't imagine that being possible.
Yeah, but I just feel like that statement doesn't say much, and what it does say just kind of opens that door as an idea. And I really don't like that door being open without talking to more students.
I think the leaner and punchier this is without all this extra stuff, the more effective it is, the more eye-catching it is. There's just no reason to have a lot of extra words. We want this revolving loan fund. We hope they'll go out and find big money for it. It makes a lot of sense, but let's keep it punchy.
So do you want to drop that sentence, too?
Yeah, I don't think it takes away from the core of the
work. Fred?
I kind of like that sentence, actually, because it addresses the fact that there has to be funding. I mean, otherwise it seems to me to be kind of a vacuum. In our discussions, we never ever did the math, and we never ever thought that the bulk of funding, or even a significant amount of funding, would come from students. We merely thought, as in some other institutions, students came up with the idea of doing this fund. They would want to contribute to that fund, and if they would like to contribute to a fund such as it, they shouldn't be prevented from doing
right.
So.
Right.
We're not trying to be prescriptive at all. We're more interested in the big idea of a revolving loan fund, and however that gets funded is something that will be worked out. We would like to see the university on record as being for a revolving loan fund more than anything else.
Okay. So I call a question on this motion to amend. Could we have a vote on the question?
We can. All in favor to call a question?
On the vote to amend this by dropping that sentence. And then we have to vote up or down to amend it by dropping it. All in favor of
calling the question.
One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, ten.
Okay.
As a side note, Marty, I know we made a few friendly amendments, but I know we took out the second example in the second.
Well, just a minute. We're not done yet.
Oh.
Sorry, I've got a really important
yeah. So. Okay. Then the question's been called on this, on the amendment to drop the sentence. This fund is to be limited to, in whatever manner the university sees fit. You have to call in favor. Those in favor,
those
drop
in favor.
The sentence.
One, two, three.
Okay, of dropping, is it?
Dropping.
Dropping. One, two, three, four, five, six. Opposed? One, two, three, four.
Okay.
It doesn't pass.
All right. It does pass.
Look.
It's dropped.
It's wait a minute. It's who didn't
buy the four?
And what is that? Okay.
Okay. So it's the sentence is dropped. All right. So can we proceed to a vote on the resolution as amended?
As I was saying before, just to make sure, did you take it out of the exact same sentences in two different parts? And I just want to make sure it's out of both parts, the third bullet point on each. I know we took out the example part, but the third bullet point down in both. Be therefore resolved. Do you guys see that? Does anyone else catch that?
Yeah, that was my intention. We should have made that more explicit. Yeah, my intention was that.
Just to make sure it's dropped in both places.
Does that make sense? I mean, to those of you who voted against or voted for taking it out, that's what you voted for. Okay. Then we'll remove it from both.
Ready to vote?
Are we ready to vote? Any further discussion?
All in favor? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 in favor. Any opposed? And any abstentions?
All right. Thank you very much.
Okay. Moving on to the next subject is Beth wanting to talk about the Family Services Committee and child care.
Thank you.
Subcommittee.
I will be as fast as humanly possible. Does anyone need a stretch break?
No.
And by the way, Beth is the employee trustee, employee elected trustee. Which one do you want to go to first?
Okay, so the first is the vision statement for the Cornell Child Care Program. So, in a nutshell, I am the new chairman of the Family Services Committee of the University Assembly, and the Child Care Committee is a subcommittee of the Family Services Committee. The Child Care Committee has brought up some documents that have actually been widely circulated and have been created, one in January, one in June, and they've just never come up through the proper channels, through the Family Services Committee to the UA. And so that's what I'm doing today. The Family Services Committee is a group that has a lot to say, if you remember, about the Child Care Center. And so these are some visions that, as I said, have already been widely circulated, and we're just looking for the UA's blessing so that we can move them up and out. And of course now FSC and CCC are working on other initiatives that hopefully with me as the chairman will make their way up to the UA. So the first one is the vision statement, yes, for the Cornell Child Care Center. It was originally completed by the subcommittee in January of 2009, and I know quite a few people have already seen it. It just hasn't been officially forwarded. They wordsmithed it. They worked on it for hours. This group spent a lot of time. So my hope is that you either have all read it or will read it and give it your blessings, and then have it as part of the UA documents that go to the administration.
Sounds great.
Sounds good. It actually, when it comes up through the child care committee, then the family services committee also puts their 2 cents into it. So many eyes have looked at this and have said, yes, this makes sense. This is a good vision. Maybe not everything is doable right away, but the vision itself.
This is not a resolution. It's just a.
It's not in the form of a resolution because as a new chair, I wasn't exactly sure what to do. Mm-hmm.
We have a representative now to your committee. Actually, we had one last year too. I'm surprised that we didn't have more of a report on this before.
Bernita is
the new representative.
Bernita's on the child care subcommittee.
Right, but she is okay. She's the representative to the family and.
Bernita never heard of her.
Well, she just got that last month.
Oh, right. Last yeah. week.
Last week.
Meeting.
Okay.
Last meeting. Sorry, last
oh,
meeting.
Oh, good. I'll need to contact her.
Right. I just don't know.
Is she to the child care committee or is she to the family services?
Family services.
Committee. Okay.
I don't know who's the child care. We don't know who's the child care committee. We ought to, as somebody who was on that committee years back, I think as a body we ought to look at this and give our comments about it. And I think it would be useful if we did it today. So if we could just do a quick look through on it. This is the vision statement, though, and what you have up there is the child care affordability and assemblies. You have to go to the vision statement.
Okay, yeah, that's the second one. So I did bring forward two.
Yeah, but we're doing vision statement now.
Yes, you are.
Do you want to just give us a little survey of the high points of the vision statement, and then we can...
Let's be labeled on.
Ain't no vision, huh?
No vision.
There's no vision.
Okay.
Are they reversed?
The vision.
No, they're not reversed. They're just not there. The other one's not there.
There are two copies of the same thing.
Yeah,
okay.
The same
thing. Well, Brett, this is a vision statement for Bright Horizons, and their vision for it was to be uniquely Cornell. And so Bright Horizons came in with all of their Bright Horizons way of doing things, and they just wanted to make sure that they got that this is Cornell, and here at Cornell we have a say in what goes on. And so the bullets that are down here are very wonderful and very logical, and I'm sure you can't really argue with a lot of them, but the new child care center should reflect the mission of Cornell and be developed as a place of inquiry where learning is valued on many levels. And I can read through all of these. The child care center is a place which honors children and celebrates families. Cornell's present and future families deserve and will expect the highest quality daycare. The center should draw on the staff and faculty's expertise because we have the human development, et cetera. Provide opportunities for research, which we do have that. Cornell recognizes that there have been insufficient child care options for our community and that cost is exorbitant. It says the opening of this center will create 150 new spaces for children. And the expansion of the child care grants for youth at this center is important, and using the policies that WDELC, Workforce Diversity, Equity, and Life Quality, now Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Department, will have some input into addressing their needs. And that is basically it. And as I said, this is from last January. So the child care is in operation. The parents have their own association, and they've got some things cooking on their own. But this is just something that they worked really hard on for this, and I think it deserves to be recognized by the UA as they are subcommittee.
So, in the absence of our chair of that committee, I'd like to move to endorse this vision statement.
I second.
Do we need any discussion?
Did it make them speak with last spring, too, kind of summarizing these same points?
Yes.
Yes, they did the chart, which is on the second table.
Well, right? We're going to do that next.
Yep. Okay.
So, all in favor of endorsing this statement?
2, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Any opposed? Oh, John?
I'm abstaining. I've read it, so I mean, I'm sure I'm in favor of good and against evil. Most
they could have said something about apple pie.
That's true. That was, no, maybe they serve apple pie there. No, maybe it's not such a good idea. All right. The second one
is, and let me tell you, there's one more coming for at a different meeting.
Now we can go back to the other one, Amy.
Okay, so this is called the Child Care Affordability and Accessibility for Cornell's Employees and Students. And this document is fairly detailed in that, I'm not going to read it, it's 8 pages long, in that it suggests that a certain percentage of your salary it should be a maximum, and I think it's 15%, to spend on child care. And what they're saying is that with the current state of child care and specifically our child care center, some people are forced to spend more or are excluded because they can't afford it. And so this is a recommendation for some things that may or may not be realistic, but it's a recommendation for trying to hit that 15% of your income for anybody who is eligible to use Bright Horizons. And there are, and you certainly can look more closely at it, but there's a whole chart.
Right. Most of the draft is in June, it looks like.
Mm-hmm.
So it was after our last meeting. And it makes sense to me that this would be a document that we ought to have presented at our next meeting by the representative chair of the committee,
mm-hmm.
and then discussed, and we'll have a chance to read it because it'll be sent to everybody.
My question is, didn't they we had a presentation.
Had a presentation about this, but this is
this has been updated with
recommendations. And the recommendations are something that we have to, you know, we have to figure out how the recommendations fit with the the information.
Okay.
Can I ask, this was drafted in June, but recently, does this reflect the change with grad students? Like they've realized that
they
were funded out
it's
of a different
fund.
These numbers and this reflect situation?
They don't. These numbers suggest that the grant be increased.
Yeah.
And that change, as I recall, is something that just happened on the side with how the health care grant is administered and where that money comes from. So I don't think that's in here.
Okay.
But either way, they're suggesting more money be offered, especially to grad students.
Yeah, Josh.
I don't want to vote on this today. I want to read it and think about
it.
Okay.
It has a lot of detail in here, and I want to review that before I make any kind of decision. So I would prefer to table this until next meeting.
Okay. Yeah,
so we'll table.
Can we have
a favorable table?
Do we need to vote on it?
No, we're just tabling.
Thank you.
And well, I expect, if you don't mind, we'd have a discussion about this at our next meeting, but we have a couple of small items to finish up, if you don't mind, Randy. One is, we now have a quorum, so we can vote on the 2 minutes. Mm-hmm. And since we got just to the verge of doing that, can we just say, do we approve those 2 passels of minutes?
Move to approve.
Okay.
One, all in favor? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11.
11, great.
00.
11:00. And there was one other point I think you wanted to bring up about. Oh, wait. Yeah, you wanted to bring up. Sorry. I think we just raise it now.
Okay. Okay. Well, hopefully we'll get to vote on it by next session. But what I'm proposing is that we change the UA charter. There's a section 2.2. It's called the exclusion clause. Right now it reads that a voting member of the UA may not serve concurrently as a university trustee or as a member of the assembly's standing committees and boards, except where specified in this charter. Well, this resolution would propose that you eliminate everything after university trustee. In other words, that university members will maintain the right to vote in assembly committees and hold leadership positions in them.
Assembly committees, including university assembly committees.
Right. And I understand the only counterpoint to this resolution would be that there would exist some conflicts of interest if university assembly members were part of those committees.
No.
However, based on my experience in the student assembly and how resolutions could be brought from a committee, and there's a very collaborative process, and same with pretty much most legislatures, you know, the congressmen could serve in committees to get legislation done. So based upon what I know of government, I think it would be a good idea that we let UA members serve in leadership roles and vote.
So we can also table, or not table, it's not been presented, but we can, that's on our plate for our next meeting. And our next meeting is?
The 18th?
14th.
Is the CJC going to be able to do that?
I met with the CJC, met yesterday. We discussed the issue, and there's a lot of debate we made on it. We only had about half the members, so we're hoping to have the fuller committee at our next meeting, which will hopefully be next week.
Okay.
What it's currently looking like we're going to do, though, what we want to do is rescind the change to the code that was made last semester, and then have a further discussion of how to deal with this provision, because there's a lengthy debate with a number of points being brought up on a number of different sides of the issues, and we feel that this is too important of a thing for us to rush to get done by the October 14th deadline. So
okay.
I will have something to present to you then, but it will most likely not be just affirming the president, endorsing okay. the president's change.
Okay.
And I'd like to propose that at that meeting, and this is the last minute of our time, that we also begin our discussion of the role of the assembly in campus governance. And it might be a nice opportunity to do that in the context, well, we'll have this discussion about the placement of people in committees. And the revision of charter that might come out of that. Okay.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that this would be a great first step, but I also thought that, you know, soon maybe we create an ad hoc committee to review the charter and its role.
Well, that's the next thing. I think we decided at the last meeting that we would discuss as a body before we created the committee. Because our thoughts were that, or at least seemed to be the consensus, although we can revoke that at the next meeting, it seemed to be the consensus that we really ought to figure out what we want to do in the assembly before we give the charter committee the responsibility of revising the charter. Does that make sense to folks, or are you okay? So we'll stick with that, and we'll have the beginnings of that discussion at the meeting.
No.
Motion to adjourn.
With one thing,
everybody. Yeah. So.
Can you imagine what healthcare
is? So, John, you're going to have something that we need to vote on?
I don't know if you want to meet with me. I'll email you before next
okay.
week. I'll ask him after I meet with CJC.
Okay.
John, if you have problems with Quora, we're supposed to bring all in talking to Steele. Like, for example, if a bunch of students don't show up, does he have like 150 committee applications? So if someone just doesn't show up in the meeting, does he just have to report it? Just for the sake of not.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.